Welcome to The Softer Side of Finance, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg explains how the finance function can create more value through the human dimensions of people, organisation and culture, with a global audience on LinkedIn Audio. Recorded as a live session, anyone can join in. Raise your hand and the stage is yours. Fancy joining Anders? Head over to LinkedIn and sign up for the next event. For now, here's what you've missed so far.
Welcome, everyone, to The Softer Side of Finance. So happy to have you all here again. We launched last week, and it was a blast, and I'm sure today is going to be great again as well. If you haven't caught the show yet, you can find all the previous episodes on Spotify, your favorite podcast channel. Just search for hashtag Finance Master, and you will find it. We are talking about the 10 commandments of planning and forecasting in this first season of The Softer Side of Finance. We kicked it off last week where we briefly touched upon all the 10 commandments. And today we will go deeper into the first commandment. So the first commandment of the planning and forecasting manifesto that we have already drafted in full, there's going to be a new ebook coming out within not too long, is thy plan shall always be aligned to thy strategy. Perhaps this seems obvious, but it's harder than it might appear, as I'm sure many of you FP&A professionals have discovered through the years. Every organization has to have a goal, purpose, we could even say. If the business, could even be not-for-profit or government or anything else, has nothing to aim for, then there's a fundamental problem that FP&A can't solve. Once a goal is established, the top-level vision and mission, this has to be translated into a clearly articulated strategy of what success looks like, with many smaller goals and milestones, of course. What activities does this successful business undertake? And how does it get from here to there? The strategy, of course, will be a broad brush, but this is where FP&A comes in. What resources does the business need to make its strategy a reality? What could change along the way? Planning and forecasting go hand in hand with strategy. It quantifies the resources needed at each stage of the intended strategic development, so that they can be in place to help the business grow. It provides clear indicators of performance for those strategic milestones as well. It offers carefully considered options to reach the same goal in a different way, responding to market conditions with the ultimate goal always in mind. Sounds simple, right? So why does this not happen every time? And why is this commandment at the forefront when we consider good planning and forecasting? Now, there's no doubt about that the topic of FP&A and strategy is something that's been weighing very heavily. Okay, maybe that sounds a bit too dark and deep, but weighing heavily on my mind in the past couple of years. And it kicked off for me when I got introduced to the thinking published in the book Strategy Beyond the Hockey Stick by some senior McKinsey consultants. In this book, they talk about what's wrong with the strategy process and how to fix it. They lay out different moves that companies can make to create value above the normal. And in a good old 80-20 fashion style, they showcase that 20% of the companies that create the most value create a huge amount of more value than all the other companies combined. So any company would want to get up there. And that's, of course, what the strategy is supposed to deliver on. But when McKinsey then outlines their 8 recommendations for things to change in the process, it has FP&A written all over it. So since then, since 2019, I've been spending a lot of writing and efforts and ebooks and whatnot. I'm trying to link the topic of FP&A and strategy a lot more, which led me to define the mission of FP&A. Of course, you can come to the stage and agree or disagree, if you will. But I say the mission is to drive the right strategic choices in the company. It's not to do planning and forecasting. Sure, those are process steps in the meeting. No, it's to be in the strategy room. If you're the VP of FP&A or whatever you are, if you're in the FP&A team, you are the ones that are supposed to drive this discussion. Yes, the CFO might be there as well, but you're the ones that are practically facilitating and driving this together with the head of strategy, if your company has such. You are the ones that outline the options that we have as a company, the choices that we can make. You might not dictate, I hope not, which choices to make, but you facilitate, call it a choice facilitation, what choices should be made in a company. And if you can do that right, granted that we can also execute as a company, you can unlock what I call the $1 trillion opportunity. What's that? That is if all FP&A teams across all companies in the world can get this done, we can at least create $1 trillion in more value than if we didn't do this. It's maybe 1% on the global EBIT margin. Not too much, right? That's what FP&A professionals need to do. But it firmly requires that planning and strategy are aligned, because otherwise we're never going to realize the strategy that we have set forth for ourselves. The challenge of linking plans and strategy, what is that really? Why is it not just happening as intended? Well, there are several things that can go wrong in the mission to attach coherent plans to a business strategy. Communication, for sure, is high on the list, along with company culture and the standing of the finance function. Now, we are not good communicators. Forget all about being part of this process here. They won't understand us, or they won't listen to us, so we won't be in that room and we won't have a chance to actually impact their strategic choices. So communication is the glue that holds plans and strategies together. Every operational unit strives to reach the organization's goal. Without good communication across all the functions, not just between FP&A and the C-suite, they will all pull in different directions. Haven't we all seen it, tried it before? The sales pipeline may be full, but if production is under-resourced for a particular range of goods, there are problems. Is the optimum product mix aligned with market needs? Both functions believe they are doing their best to fulfill the company's strategic goals. But without good communication and constant feedback in planning and resourcing for the best joint strategy, neither will prevail. How does the company view the finance department? A mature FP&A function has a seat at the highest table. An overview of the whole business and the respect of its peers. An embryonic finance function that has not yet achieved the right level of business partnering, which by all means is what it takes, may be siloed and focused on recording and reporting and processing paperwork. It's not the first time I say this, but many FP&A teams, finance teams, spend up to 70% just wrangling the data and making sure it gets in report and make it available to the business. I'm not saying this shouldn't be done, but spending 70% of our time on it, that's just not on in today's world with the tools we have available. And no, it doesn't have to be a big, you know, down in the basement installation. You know, the cloud tools are available. If you don't believe me, send me a message and I'll share with you our market guide to third generation FP&A tools. They're all out there. Because FP&A has a pivotal role to play in aligning strategy and plans in a holistic way. And of course, needs the trust of the C-suite to carry this out. Otherwise, it's not going to work. That's for sure. Another challenge that FP&A teams often face is that we're trying to dictate how, for instance, the planning process should run. But you may have seen recent, let's say, new frameworks come out, such as XP&A, Extended Planning Analysis, where we should extend one way of doing planning analysis across the company. Now, when I read this, and of course, I may be biased and wrong, but when I read this, it says FP&A must extend their principles of planning analysis across the company. And it may be in some companies that is the way to go. But honestly speaking, to me, it's not so much about extending. I agree we should use one approach to planning analysis. But it's much more about getting the different teams to collaborate around how we do this. And for all practical purposes, it could very well be that is in sales, the S&OP process, for instance, where the best planning analysis principles are applied. So if PNA needs to be open, receptive towards doing it in different ways, that way we can learn, in that way we can collaborate better, in that way we can have the strongest planning process in the company. FP&A cannot and should not do this alone. It just does not work like that. So how can we start to overcome some of these challenges? Probably not a surprise to many of you to hear that, at least for me, it all starts with effective business partnering. Successful enterprises have many moving parts, and FP&A can balance the whole and support the C-suite's plans for the future. And this is important for businesses of any size in the current environment of constant change, but it's particularly critical for rapidly growing and evolving enterprises. Whether growth is organic or by acquisition, FP&A is central to ensuring that the resources available line up with the strategic goals of the business. When external factors conspire to derail the plans, FP&A is ready with a new route that aligns with the overall strategy. So we've done the scenario planning. We know what options are at the table. And as we'll also talk about in future shows, we know when the plan is not on track, because we're tracking that. We're tracking that in as close to real time as possible. So we don't have to wait 3 months or 6 months to understand the strategy is working. No, we'll know as soon as it is likely not working. It doesn't mean we need to change the whole strategy, but at least we know now something is happening that we didn't expect. Let's come together to discuss if we should change something or we should stay the course. If the plans don't align with the strategy, look to the state of business partnering. Build relationships that matter. Focus on understanding each of the moving parts and develop mutual trust and respect in order to deliver the best strategic plans for the business. It's really as simple as that. And then I'm just going to open up the Q&A part of today's talk. A few questions here. Now is a good chance to raise hand and come up and share your thoughts. So how have you seen this challenge of aligning planning and strategy in your career? How is it happening in your company today or previous companies if you don't want to talk about your current company? Come up and share. Let's get the discussion going. Right, I can see Lucia is raising a hand here, so we will do that. Lucia, welcome to the stage. Feel free to introduce yourself and share your perspective, or of course, also ask questions if you will.
Hello, good morning, everybody. I'm calling from the US here. I'm a digital finance transformation manager around culture. So one of the things I have found is that for years and years, we have celebrated business partnership. And I've always said that everybody sees themselves as a great business partner, but we really haven't defined what that is. So we're really comparing ourselves to ourselves, right? Everybody has a different style and everybody has a different definition of how happy my business partner has to be. So I think in terms of this cultural transformation, we have to actually define that. And in the process, our business partner may not like that because we are going to be changing things. We are going to be changing process. We are going to have to say no. And I think that is one of the paradoxes that we have to embark on, knowing that the business partnership that we're building, the insiders, the visionaries, the relationship builders, the communicators, the really right hand of that business partner is going to come out of it. But the change from being the rapport generators, the scenario builders, the 70% of the time, you know, building Excel, that's going to be a change, right? And I think often we forget that in this journey, our business partners may not like it. Probably, yes, at the C-suite, VP level. But once you go down a few levels down in the organization, when we're talking to the analyst level, I believe that is one of the hardest things, knowing that you're not going to make them happy because things are going to change. Do you have any thoughts around that?
Absolutely, Lucia. And it feels a bit like you almost opened Pandora's box for talking business partnering for the next 2 hours. But I think the first central principle of business partnering that's key is that we are here to help business be successful, right? So if you have business leaders, and they can be all the way from the C-suite down to somewhere in the organization where we still support them as business partners, we're there to help them be successful. Right. So our starting point is always to say they have goals, priorities that they need to deliver, which should be aligned with our annual plans and our strategy as well. Right. So if we see that as our main goal to help them be successful, I'm yet to meet the business leader that says, hey, I don't want help achieving my goals. You just go back to where you came from. Of course, we need to be able to deliver with skill. And we are. We can, because we are smart people. We're there to help them. Right. And even if there might be a performance gap and they're behind and so on and so forth, we use inclusive language and say, I'm here for you. I'm your partner. I can see we're having some performance issues. Let's figure out together how to solve it. Right. So it's not you are behind, you fix it. It's that kind of inclusive language. And then we should be bold and say, how am I going to measure my success as a finance business partner? I've been business partner. It is to say three things. First of all, the business needs to be successful. There's no way in finance, FP&A teams can be successful if the business is not successful, right? So we need to link our success with business success. That's number one. Now, number two is, it could, of course, be that the business is very successful without us, right? So we need to ask them for feedback. Do they think we are part of making them successful? And then last but not least, if all they want is report and data and they are good at running the business themselves, we also need to have some examples or cases where we can say, we took part in this project here, or we were part of this initiative and it delivered some value. Not to claim it for ourselves, but to be able to articulate and speak to what was it that we did, which clearly goes beyond just sharing reports or sitting in the back of the room taking notes and sending out actions. And we need to be leading or driving certain initiatives or certain projects to be a part of this. So those were at least a few perspectives, Lucia. How does that sound to you?
I agree 100%. And I think we also need to add the element of management support, because in the past, in my experience as a business partner, as we are transforming things, my team needed my full support, because the director or the manager that they are supporting, they might not embrace all this. It's going to be a little difficult. In theory, they are going to align, but in a day-to-day execution, they're going to push back. So I think that we adding the elements that they do need a strong leadership support. Our FP&A team needs that, because there are times that they are going to feel like they're not getting through, right? They're not getting through that wall of 30 years of a finance function operating under a different model. So I appreciate your thoughts around that. And yes, we can talk about this for hours.
No, thanks for adding that, Luciana. And of course, the tone from the top and support from the top is very important. And I say that in the sense of the senior finance leaders, FP&A leaders, they need to be role model business partners as well. Because let's take the CFO, for instance. If he or she is not a role model business partner, doesn't have a good relationship with the CEO and maybe the other C-suite members, what happens is business leaders is looking in at the CFO and the finance team thinking, CFO is not that good. Probably the finance team is not good either. And at the same time, the team members reporting to the CFO and perhaps all the way down to everyone in the finance organization would look at that CFO and say, he's just not that good. So probably this business partnering piece is not so important. Let's focus on something else instead. And that just goes to show how critical this role modeling is. So it's not just about the CFO or the VP of FP&A saying, hey, we need to be business partners. I'll talk to someone if they're not. It's about them being great business partners as well. I think that's a very critical element and one that has often challenged many finance teams, because these senior leaders, they're from, most of them, I don't want to offend anyone, they are usually from a slightly different time where you grew up through audit and accounting, and then you moved to FP&A, you moved to something else, and now you're maybe a bit outside your comfort zone, and you haven't lived in this FP&A business partner world for a good part of your career. So it's uncomfortable for them as well. And it's going to be a personal development journey for them as well. But if they don't go on it, it's going to be a big challenge. That's just my added perspective there. But now we have Sharon on the stage. Sharon, welcome to the stage. Feel free to introduce yourself and share your perspective.
Thanks, Anders. Sorry, I thought I should say something. I'm not in finance. I thought I would do finance in life when I was a student at the university, but I ended up in HR. But I get to collaborate quite a lot with finance business partners and finance planners in Musk. I work with Musk. And I wanted to just share my thoughts around how I feel finance has evolved over time, and especially from my perspective working for Musk the last 9 years. I remember when I joined in 2013, and I wouldn't say that finance were best friends with HR. I think I can say that now. And it goes back to the kind of relationship and collaboration we've built over time. I think getting to understand why finance needs certain information or why they need certain data has been a deal breaker for us. And them coming to me knowing that they're speaking to a layman sometimes really has helped to build our relationship. And I find today we collaborate more and they support me as a business leader, as an HR leader, at a space where I feel confident of the relationship. And I'm not just saying this for myself as an HR leader, but also for the other business leaders. But I think for me, the thing that has been a turning point is the understanding of the why these reports are needed or why we're looking at certain data. I think really, for me, that has been a great point. The other aspect is building relationships beyond the day-to-day running of reports. I think the outside relationships where you get to connect with your other business leaders and understand their perspectives, I think has really been of great influence in changing my view or changing the relationship between finance and other functions. So I wanted to share that. I joined this call today, not as a finance person, but as someone who gets quite a lot of support from finance. So thank you. And I look forward to the next session.
Thanks a lot, Sharon. Thanks for coming up and sharing your perspective. Myself, having quite a lot of experience with Maersk as well, of course, I can also tell that it's been a long journey and it's a continued journey at Maersk, just to give an example where finance is becoming better at business partnering all the time. And looking at a bit where you have worked, at least in recent years, Sharon, I can definitely vouch for the fact that you have worked with some great finance leaders there as well. So thanks a lot for sharing that experience. And I think many companies out there are in this development phase. Some are more mature than others. Some are, let's say, investing more in it than others. But it's not something that happens overnight, also to Lucia's point, right? It's a change journey. And it could take some years before it really takes hold in the company. And you are bound to meet some people that may be more challenged in terms of wanting to work with you than others. So maybe there will be some laggards that needs to be convinced over a longer period. If we cannot get this business partnering piece done, then aligning planning with the strategy is likely not going to be that successful. And more likely, your strategy is not going to be such a great strategy in any case. With that said, I want to thanks a lot, Lucia and Sharon, coming to the stage, sharing your perspectives, asking questions. You are the ones that make this show come alive. And of course, I want to thanks everyone for listening in as well. We'll be back next week, probably at a bit earlier timing, but we'll be tackling the second of the 10 commandments. But meanwhile, if you have any questions, you can always reach out. I'll post a link to the article that we've discussed in this show here today in the event page. And with that said, have a great rest of day or coming day to all of you, and hopefully see you next week.
You've been listening to The Softer Side of Finance, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on how the finance function can create more value. And why not join Anders every Monday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?